And thanks for joining us on the JX. We'll start with history, things that happened 150 years ago in our region. The Modoc War of 1872 and 1873 pitted the Modoc tribe against the U.S. Army, with the central feature the standoff in the lava beds near Tule Lake. It ended with death and capture and execution for Modoc leaders and the removal of most of the Modoc people from the area. The Modoc War is being commemorated with several events, including one coming up Thursday evening at 7 at the Klamath County Museum in Klamath Falls. Matt Volk is the Klamath Museum curator and one of our guests on the Jefferson Exchange. Hi, Matt.
Hi.
Ken Sandusky is with us as well from the Modoc Tribe, Resource and Development Director in the Klamath Basin. Hi, Ken.
Good morning.
Ken, if you would give an overview of the commemorations of the Modoc War. This event coming up Thursday is by no means the first event.
Sure. Yeah, I'll defer on the events to Matt, but it's been ongoing, really in alignment with the dates that the original conflicts occurred, everything from presentations, during the winter at the library to field visits, and just all kinds of really good stuff leading to some long needed healing in this community.
And what triggered the war, Ken? I mean, the story of the Modocs taking refuge in the lava beds is well known, but the precipitating events perhaps less well known.
Sure. Well, when the Applegate and Burnett trails crossed through the Modoc's hunting grounds, those were revered lands and managed for their productivity. And so, as you can imagine, there was a instant impact on food availability for the Modoc people, which then in turn led to a number of conflicts well represented in history. But what does get left out is the impacts that the activity in otherwise pristine hunting grounds had for generations, really, prior to any real conflicts.
Now, Matt Volkel, it was a highly documented war, but certainly subject to the people in control of the narrative at the time. Can you give a sense of how it was portrayed in the media of the time, which were, print media?
Well, what's kind of surprising is that initially it was covered like any other Indian war, where the tribes were presented in a negative light. But as time went on, it became clear that the Modocs weren't necessarily the ones at fault. And so you start to see a more sympathetic viewpoint in the press. You had a reporter by the name of Edward Fox who went and visited in Captain Jack's stronghold. He talked to Kent Push, Captain Jack, and was able to figure out where all this was coming from. And his story went out through papers in the East and really reached sympathetic ears. And the thing that changed all that in the end was when General Canby was killed in April 1873. And that's when things pivoted towards, once again, a more negative light. And but, again, it's a surprising thing because for the majority of the conflict, the press was largely sympathetic.
Hmm. And that was unusual, you're saying, for the time.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Is there a particular approach being taken in telling this story now, some themes that have been agreed upon or just allowed to see the light of day, perhaps, that weren't in the past, 150 years later?
Yes, I feel that there are. We've been working in conjunction with tribal members and consulting with Modoc Nation and Klamath tribes and how to approach this. We've been meeting with people of Modoc ancestry and Modoc members of the tribes to really portray their story in a meaningful way and in a way that is fair to them and true to history. And so our general themes for this are remember, reflect, and respect. And so we've tried to base all of our programs based on that, on those three terms.
And it was remember, respect, and I'm sorry, what was the other one?
Reflect.
Remember, respect, reflect.
Yeah. Or remember, reflect, respect, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so how much involvement is there from the Modoc Nation, Ken Sandusky?
The Modoc Nation being forcefully removed 150 years ago is now, you know, headquartered in Miami, Oklahoma.
Right.
They are making significant investments in their homeland through employing myself and one other who is a Modoc descendant in himself. I'm actually Oklahoma Choctaw member, but, you know, so their investments include appointing representatives to participate. In addition to that, a new cultural director in Oklahoma who has spent time in the basin, obviously a Modoc descendant herself, so ties to the area as well, participates and advises. There's a substantial commitment from the members and tribal leadership in Oklahoma to be involved, to contribute to all the good work going on in the basin. There are there are Modoc Nation members in 30 some states, including California and Oregon, and so those folks are also heavily involved and paying attention, supporting what's going on.
We're talking about the Modoc Nation here on the Jefferson Exchange and the Modoc War of 1872-73 being commemorated 150 years later by a series of events around our region. We're talking with Ken Sandusky, who's a resource and development director in the Klamath Basin for the Modoc tribe, and Matt Volkel, who's the Klamath Museum curator. There's an event coming up Thursday evening at 7 at the Klamath Museum, and you can join us with your thoughts via email at jx@jeffnet.org. So, Matt, as you delve into the material from 150 years ago, what are the most common questions you would say that get asked about the war?
Well, people really want to know who is responsible, who's the bad guy in all this. And
that's a loaded question,
and,
huh?
Yeah, and in the end, it's a really complicated answer. I think you could probably pin it down to the machinations of some locals who unscrupulous land barons, I guess you could say, and people with an idea to set up a railroad through here. And also, we could also say it's due to kind of an ineptitude within the Oregon Indian Superintendency in the government. So, once the war begins, things get much more complicated. So, yeah.
Well, and we mentioned some of the names already, Kent Push, Captain Jack, and General Canby, but are you focusing on some of the people not so famous in your portrayal of the war?
Yes. So in this program coming up on Thursday, we're focusing on a bunch of people who don't normally get talked about. We'll be talking about two tribal members. One is Mucha, and the other one is Teehee Jack. Teehee Jack, the interesting thing about him is that he has hundreds of descendants in this area still. I was able to talk with a whole bunch just on Saturday. And so even though he did not survive the conflict, his posterity has carried on and been... they have a huge impact still in this area. Some of the other ones we're talking about are a civilian packer, a local rancher, two Warm Springs warriors who were killed fighting for the government, and an army officer. And so we're trying to cover all of the parties involved in this conflict and show that this war touched not just members of the tribe or soldiers, but it had impact elsewhere as well in the lives that it affected.
Well, and the war did affect a lot of lives. I mean, between casualties of battle and later executions and displacements, I mean, would there be a Modoc Nation in Oklahoma, Ken Sandusky, if it weren't for this war?
Well, you know, as a member of a forcefully removed tribe myself, I, you know, would think that that's the way that the tides were turning at that point in time. If you go back, you know, the war itself is often the focus of what occurred, but for at least a couple of generations prior and really ever since, these folks and a lot of other indigenous people have been fighting just to exist on this planet. So this, you know, the removal may have been different, but the struggle would have occurred one way or the other. You know, it's worth remembering and mentioning that, you know, occurrences like the Battle of Castle Crags, the last time a tribe fought against an army, the U.S. Army, with bows and arrows, where one of their main chief was killed. And, you know, they had been down on the upper Sacramento River looking for fish because all the game had been run off of their homelands, all the way to the Modoc people being separated to this day, with a lot of the Modocs stayed behind, didn't participate in the war. Actually, most Modocs were not removed to Oklahoma and became members of the Klamath tribes. Their family, cousins, and you know, extended family are members of the Oklahoma Modoc tribe. So even to this day, that struggle continues.
Ken Sandusky is with the Modoc tribe, and our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, Matt Volkels, with the Klamath Museum. We're talking about the Modoc War of 1872-73 and a series of commemorative events, including one coming up Thursday, June 8th at 7 p.m. Before this, Matt, I mean, does the museum have a standing display on the Modoc War?
We do, and it's been in place for a few years. It's due for an update. We also have a temporary exhibit in the hallway when you enter the main floor of the museum. So people will be able to look at different documents that help give context to what was going on in the war. But we noticed that the Modoc War itself has been one of the more, I don't want to say popular, that's probably not the right word, but people seem to take quite an interest in the story of the Modoc War when they visit the museum, and that ends up being kind of the focal point for a lot of the stuff they're reading. So, we try to tell that story as fairly as we can, and to make sure that people understand the story correctly.
It presents a real opportunity for you, from the sounds of it, to help people get further immersed in the details of something that does fascinate them already.
Yeah, absolutely.
Are there still some blind spots in the knowledge, Matt? I mean, are there some things we do not know about the Modoc War and wish we did?
Absolutely. So not that much is known about the Modoc participants themselves after they leave the stronghold, because they didn't keep written records. They didn't have a language where there was writing. It was only an oral language. And so it's hard to pin down what was going on when they left the stronghold, where they went, how they acted, and how their discussions went in the final phases of the conflict. And and we know that there was conflict but within the tribe, but other than that, we don't know a whole lot of what was going on within the tribe at the time.
And Ken, what would you say is the greatest desire of the Modoc people to be known about that war?
the people and the land were one. These folks stewarded this area since time immemorial. And, you know, the healing, this remembrance, this reflecting that we're doing now is tied to the health of all the people in the area, the health of the land and the wildlife, the water, you know, the fish, the farmers, the producers, we're all interrelated. And, you know, as we move past the immense negativity associated with the genocide that occurred around here, we're also wrestling with the effects of the wholesale change of the environment, the ecology, and they're interrelated. So the healing of the relationships can help lead to the healing of the land and the livelihoods that people depend on from that land.
Just a couple seconds here. Matt, can you give us a quick outline of what will happen Thursday evening?
Yeah, so we'll have introductory remarks from the museum director, Todd Keppel. And then we'll jump right into and we'll also have remarks from the second chief of the Modoc Nation, Gina McGahey. Am I saying that right, Ken?
Yeah, McGahey.
Okay. And so she'll address us, and then we'll go into the program, and there will be three or four of us speaking about different participants in the war. And I mentioned that list earlier, but...
Right. Okay. We have to go, so let people know that they can be there Thursday at 7 o'clock at the Klamath County Museum. Thanks to Matt Volkel from the museum, Ken Sandusky from the Modoc Nation. Thank you both. This is
Thank
the
you.
Jefferson Exchange on JPR. We'll be back.
All right, thank you.